So then verse 1:12, this is another example, so it helps clarify. When drops of water fill a vase full, just as it is not the first drop that fills the vase, so too it is not the last drop, nor each drop individually. Through the gathering of dependent factors, the vase is filled. Okay, good thing to think about when you have a leaking faucet. Yeah? And you have a container there, and what is filling the vase as it's going plunk, plunk, plunk as you're trying to go to sleep? And, you know, instead of letting it drive you crazy, yeah, which drop is filling the vase? Well, it's not the first drop. So the first drop alone doesn't fill it. The last drop alone doesn't fill it. Any of the drops individually don't fill it. The vase only gets filled because of the accumulation of many things. Okay? So there's many parts, many causes. It's not just one thing. Yeah? Okay? So, similarly, yeah, when we think of karma, you know, sometimes karma can be, you know, when we're first introduced to it, it's explained in a very simple manner. Well, our parents are actually the first ones who teach us about karma. You hit the neighbor, he's going to hit you back. So don't hit him. Okay? That's our first teaching about karma from our parents. Yeah, you throw sand in their eyes, they're going to throw sand in your eyes. Don't do it. Yeah, but then, you know, so when karma sometimes is explained, it's, you know, okay, you know, you speak badly to that person's going to speak badly to you in a future life. Then you get all confused because if you speak badly to a bodhisattva, how can a bodhisattva speak badly to you? Because a bodhisattva, you know, doesn't do things like that, okay? So then you come, you go, and then you realize, okay, my understanding of karma wasn't right. You know, just because I spoke badly to that person, it doesn't mean that that specific person is the one that speaks badly to me. It just means that somehow, you know, I'm going to hear some unpleasant words somewhere along the line. Okay. And then, you know, again, we'll think of it in some very reified, you know, inherently insistent way. You know, I call somebody a name, they're going to call me a name. Yeah. Well, karma isn't so rigid like that. Again, sometimes there's many karmas that have to come together for one result. Okay. And sometimes one action can produce many results. Yeah. And even in the ripening of karma, it's not sufficient just the action that we do to have that action ripen. We also need the cooperative conditions for that karmic seed to ripen. Okay? So if we hear unpleasant words, it's not just that, you know, I swore at somebody, you know, in a previous life, so they're swearing at me now. It's also I went to the bar and I got drunk. So here I am in the perfect position, putting myself in the perfect position for a negative karma to ripen. Okay? That negative karma may not have ripened if I had stayed home and read a Dharma book. Okay? But when we choose, when we do certain, put ourselves in certain external situations, they can either facilitate or suppress the ripening of a certain karma. Okay? So we begin to see that the experiences that we have, they're due to many causes, okay? The principal cause may be one or many actions that we've done in the past. But then it's also the cooperative conditions, the situation that we put ourselves in right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And that's why, for example, I mean, you may have created the causes to gain spiritual realizations, but if you don't sit down and meditate, then, you know, that karma is going to have difficulty ripening. Yeah. If you live in a place where everybody's meditating and so, you know, there you are in the hall twice a day because everybody else is doing it, that's going to create the cooperative conditions for maybe some of your past understandings of the Dharma to become more manifest in this life. Okay? Yeah? So similarly, actually, you know, we can look at that action of coming to the meditation hall. That thing of coming to the meditation hall and sitting and meditating now, it can be the principal cause for a future result. Okay? It's also the result of causes that we've created in the past. It also could be the cooperative condition for other causes to ripen. Okay? So we shouldn't think, you know, cause, effect, condition, that these things are also inherently existent, because they, whether something is a cause or an effect or a condition, or I should say principal cause or a condition or an effect, that too is dependent on their relationship to other things. Okay? So depending upon how you see the actions, you know, meditating in the meditation hall, if you see it in relationships to the results it's going to create, as it, you know, in the, let's say, future lives, it then is the principal cause. If you see it as in terms of the results that are going to come in that very session, then it's a cooperative condition for previous karmas to ripen. Okay? If you're seeing it as just, I'm so fortunate to have this opportunity to be here, then you're seeing it in relationship to the past, so then it has the label of result. Okay? It's in the same way that somebody can be a mother, a daughter, a sister, a grandma, a grandchild, a co-worker, a client, a patient, an employee, an employer. One person can have many, many hats, because all those hats exist in relationship to other people. Okay? Yeah. So actually, this is another way in which we can do some analysis to understand emptiness, is to see how we see things is always in relationship to something else. Always. Yeah? There's no such thing as an employer without an employee. Yeah. And that's why when people say, you know, sometimes they thank me for a Dharma talk, and I say thank you for coming, because if they didn't come, I wouldn't have the title. You know, the title teacher is just a role that I happen to be in a certain situation. I am not a teacher. It's a role, and that title, you know, or that label applies because there's people coming to listen. But that doesn't make an inherently existent teacher, because actually in relationship to my teachers, then I'm a student. And in relationship to my friends, then, you know, I'm a supportive friend. Okay? So, you know, who we are exists, or what the labels we put on ourselves exist in relationship to other things, other people, other situations. And those situations and people exist in relationship to us, too. Okay? So if somebody doesn't become a mother, it's not that the mother exists first and then the child exists. We usually think first the mother exists and then the child exists. Yeah, we think that way because the mother has been alive for a long time. But actually, the mother and child come into existence at the same time. Because some woman does not become a mother until the moment that she's having a child. So the mother doesn't come first. She becomes the mother at the moment that there's a child. And that child becomes a child at the moment that they have a mother. Okay? So they become mother and child at the same time. I'm saying to a group of women who have never had children, but who have all been daughters. Okay. So, yeah. So all those things, you know, depend on each other. Things come into existence like that. Long and short. You know, something's not inherently long or inherently short. They exist long and short in relationship to other people. Yeah. I usually think of myself as a short person. I go to Singapore and I feel so tall. Because compared to the other women there, I'm tall. Yeah. But actually, my normal feeling is short. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, you become long, short. You become tall and short. You know, independence in relationship to others. Okay. So it's quite interesting to think of many of these things. And, you know, the labels we give to ourselves, the identities we create, and see how all of these things are just, you know, created, they come into existence together in relationship to each other. Okay. And it's even more interesting when you start to think of all the things that we think of as admirable and disgusting, as good and bad, as successful and failure. Okay? And we usually see all these things. I think success and failure is a great example. You know? Because we've received so much conditioning about this is success and this is failure. So we believe it. Yeah? And we feel like failures. Because there's only one or two people that, you know, and we always see other people as successful, doing better than us, therefore I'm a failure. Once in a while I'm a success and other people are failures. Okay? But aren't success and failure just created by the mind? Aren't they just labels? You know, that groups of people gave to certain situations? And was there ever a first person who created these labels? I mean, we all learn these labels from our parents, our teachers, the society around us. Yeah. So we're so involved in trying to be successes and hiding failures, and yet whatever we consider success and failure is just something that exists by being merely labeled. Just because a bunch of people made it up. That this action is a success, you know, this situation is a success, and that situation is a failure. And people made it up. Yeah? And what was the criteria they used to make it up? It was usually an ignorant criteria. Okay? A criteria based on greed, based on attachment. If you have a lot of stuff, you're a failure. I mean, you're a success. Yeah, and if you don't have a lot of stuff, you're a failure. But why we always think that way, you know, because as a society, and it's not even one person, you know, you can't pinpoint one person at all. It's just because people think like that, then you have success and failure. If people didn't think like that, there wouldn't be success and failure. It's only because we created those words and those ideas that those things come into existence. It's all just totally created by mind. Okay? Like what we call beautiful and ugly. Completely created by our mind. Yeah? It's simply because we learned, or, you know, maybe innately we have some attraction towards something, you know. But we can learn to think anything is beautiful. They always warn you about that when you become a monastic, because, you know, sometimes when you become a monastic and you shave your head and you wear these robes, I mean, you don't look very attractive. So then you think, okay, well, you're never going to get attracted to another monastic. You know, and then our teachers warn us, look, you think you're going to start saying a monkey is, you know, attractive. Yeah? Because our mind can make anything attractive, can't it? Yeah? Yeah? Sometimes you look at some person, you go, oh, ugly. Then, you know, you look at them a little bit later, then, not bad, then you can. You know? And we think it's what they are from their side, but it's just fabricated by our mind. You know, and then when society has these standards, you know, then you think, okay, that's gorgeous and that's ugly, but it's just labels that people made up, you know, and definitions that people made up. If you had a beauty contest in the, what is it, AARP? Yeah? What's the AA for? American Association of Retired People. Okay. So you have a beauty contest, or you have a sports contest. Okay, so what you're going to call athletic and what you're going to call gorgeous is going to be different. And yet the mind will make that into athletic and gorgeous. Yeah. So there's Mr. Handsome, you know, with his cane and his dentures. Okay, so the whole point is here, we're talking about dependency. Yeah, that things don't have their own nature. They come into being in dependence upon other things and in dependence upon how we conceive and label them. Yeah. And we look out the window and we say those are prayer flags. Somebody else might look out the window and say they're rags. Why do you have rags on a rope? Yeah. Somebody could very well see that. Yeah. So, yeah. What? Yeah. Okay. So through the gathering of dependent factors, the base is filled. Okay, so it's an interdependent collection. You know, all the different drops. You have the vase. You have to have the water. You have to have the faucet that's dripping it in. Okay, all those things happen. Okay, then verse 113. Likewise, when someone experiences joy and suffering, the fruits of karma, this is not due to the first instance of the cause, nor is it due to the last instance of the cause alone. Yet through the aggregation of factors, joy and pain are felt. So within this mere appearance, I'll observe the norms of ethics. Okay? So likewise, when someone experiences joy and suffering, the fruits of karma. Okay, karma mostly ripens in our aggregate of feeling. You know, we have five aggregates: form, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness. Okay, karma mainly ripens in the aggregate of feeling. Because feeling here, it doesn't mean emotion, it means feelings such as pleasure, pain, and neutral. Okay, happy, miserable, and indifferent. Those kind of feelings. So karma mainly affects that particular aggregate. Okay, so that's why it says when someone experiences joy and suffering, the fruits of karma. Okay, it's referring to the feelings of joy and suffering are our fruits of karma. Right? It is not due to the first instance of the cause, nor is it due to the last instance of the cause. Okay, so like the drops in the bucket, it's not the first and the last. So similarly, like, it's really hot today. Yeah? Well, we say I'm hot not because of the first moment of heat and not because of the last moment of heat, but because there's a series of moments of heat. Okay? So in dependence upon those, we say, oh, I'm hot. So similarly, in dependence upon many causes, or dependence upon a cause that had many moments or many parts to it, then a result which has many moments and many parts comes. Because also our joy and our suffering aren't inherently existent either. Okay? we just label joy independent upon certain feelings that have a similar quality, or we label suffering independent upon certain experiences that have a certain quality, a certain similar quality. Okay? Yet through the aggregation of factors, joy and pain are felt. Okay? So all these many aggregation, many different factors, yeah? The principal cause, the karma, the cooperative conditions, the situation we're in, the many moments that it happens over. Okay, so again, the conclusion is, so within this mere appearance, I'll observe the norms of ethics. Okay, so even though joy and pain, happiness and misery are experienced, even though they're empty, they have no inherent existence, okay, even though they're empty, we experience them, they arise due to causes, so therefore, we need to pay attention to what causes we create, because the principal thing influencing our joy and our misery are the actions that we've done before. Okay? So all these things that cause us creating effects, you know, all happens within the sphere of emptiness. And I think that the reason Dharma Rakshit is emphasizing it here at this time is because most of the text that came before was talking about karma. Remember the beginning part? You know, we had verses such as, around the beginning verse, when I become separated from my helpful and loving friends, it is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for my luring away others' companions. From now on, I shall never estrange others from their companions. I just picked out a verse, okay? So there, you know, he's talking about we're experiencing the misery in this situation. What brought it about is I did this, okay, in a previous life. So even though those things are empty, they function, and the misery comes through having done that, you know, created that cause. Yeah. Later on in the text, it talks about causes that we're creating right now, okay? Refusing to condemn the deeds contrary to Dharma, I level varied criticisms against the well-spoken words, dance and trample on the head of this betrayer, false conception, mortally strike at the heart of this butcher, the enemy, the self. So remember that second portion of the teachings where all those verses said that? There it is talking about, you know, look at what we're doing and think about the kind of karma you're creating under the influence of the self-grasping ignorance and the self-centered mind. Okay? So I think he's emphasizing so much here about karma and results functioning because the beginning part of the text was so much about, you know, the results we experience and the causes that we're creating under the influence of ignorance and self-centeredness. Okay?